From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It is Thursday, May 19th, 2016, and we are so honored that you've allowed Current Sports to be a part of your weekday afternoon yet again. Folks, we've got a fantastic hour of conversation, fun, and debate on today's show. We will talk about the Big Ten nearing a media rights deal that may not include ESPN. Interesting conversation there. Also, new details concerning sexual assault claims at Baylor University, specifically with the football team, okay? And we may be talking about a cover-up here, folks, so we'll bring that story to you. Also, folks, tonight marks the airing of yet another new episode of Current Sports TV, and folks, you don't want to miss it. 10:30 p.m. on WKAR-TV, I will chat with the very first African-American head coach here at Michigan State University, the great Jim Bibbs. And you guys know what we do at 1 o'clock here each and every Thursday on Current Sports Radio. That's right, we give you guys a preview of whatever that chat may be that night. All right, so you'll get a bit of a sneak peek into that interview in just a second. You don't want to miss that. And we will also have Throwback Thursday and so much more on the back end of the show. But hey, you know how we start this party. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. Again, for this Thursday, May 19th. All right, we start with an update concerning the softball classic, folks. The final is now set. The DeWitt Panthers landed a spot in the Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame Softball Classic Championship with a 12-9 victory over previously unbeaten Grand Ledge last night at Rainey Park. Grand Ledge was hurt by a season-high 5. Yes, count them, 5 errors. Also, Lakewood advanced to the championship game by posting a 4-0 victory over defending champion Holt in a semifinal last night as well. Now, the Vikings and Panthers will square off tomorrow evening for the entire enchilada. Good luck to both of those teams, ideally pulling out 2 upsets. Pretty cool stuff. All right, the Michigan State baseball team will host Maryland in a final series of the regular season this weekend, starting this afternoon at McLane Baseball Stadium. That's right, today's opener will take place at 3:05 p.m. and will air on the Big Ten Network. Friday's contest will also start at 3:05 p.m. before the series finale and Senior Day, which will take place on Saturday at 1:05 p.m. With 33 wins this year, MSU is tied for the 10th most wins in school history with the 2013 and 2004 teams. Now, 2 more wins would put the 2016 club in the top 5 in school history and in a tie for 4th with the 2011, 1992, and 1971 teams. The team will be trying to shake off a 3-game losing streak. For the second time in 3 weeks, the Detroit Tigers have found the answer to their struggles in a series against the Minnesota Twins. Ian Kinsler's 6th inning home run completed a 3-hit, 2-RBI day in support of Justin Verlander, whose 7 1/3 quality innings sent the D into cruise mode to a 3-game sweep of Minnesota with a 6-3 win Wednesday afternoon at Comerica Park. Detroit enjoys its first off day in 2.5 weeks today before opening a 3-game weekend series against the Tampa Bay Rays with a 7:10 p.m. Eastern Time game on Friday at Comerica Park. Now, Anibal Sanchez, he will take the mound and he tries for his first win since April 28th and first quality start on the year opposite Matt Andrés, who is 2-0 with a .56 ERA. All right, Detroit's new minor league hockey team will be called the St. Clair Shores Fighting Saints and will play its first game at the City Civic Arena on Stevens Road in early November. The team's name, logo, and colors were released at a news conference yesterday afternoon. The Fighting Saints become the latest member of the Federal Hockey League, which has teams in the Northeast and Midwest, including the Port Huron Prowlers, who captured the Commissioner's Cup championship back in April. According to reports, that is, Commissioner will acknowledge, but neither confirm nor deny, the Big Ten will partner up with Fox for half of its new media rights deal, set to begin next year. As for where that leaves ESPN, Jim Delaney will neither confirm nor deny that it leaves ESPN, really, anywhere. We'll have more on that story in just a sec. Don't go anywhere. Jeff Hornacek will be the new head coach of the New York Knicks. Hornacek was one of four known candidates for the Knicks position, which opened when the team fired Derek Fisher back in February. Kurt Rambis, had received strong consideration for the post since the regular season ended, really, with backing from the great Phil Jackson. Now, Rambis was 9-19 after replacing Fisher. Alabama offered a football scholarship to an eighth grader. I kid you not, folks. Yes, an eighth grader. He's a linebacker. His name is Jesus Machado, and Alabama offered him a scholarship on Monday. His high school head coach, Dennis Moriquin, told that news to ESPN.com. It is not the first time a young prospect has been offered a scholarship and certainly won't be the last, but it is still a very rare occurrence. The Crimson Tide aren't the only ones, though, interested in Machado, who is a 6-foot, 195-pound defensive prospect from Florida. In addition to his Alabama offer, Machado also has verbal offers from Iowa State, NC State, West Virginia, and yes, you guessed it, Michigan State University. As Baylor University's Board of Regents reviews a law firm's findings about the school's response to sexual violence allegations, many involving its football players, ESPN's Outside the Lines has obtained documents that detail largely unknown allegations of sexual assault, domestic violence, and other acts of violence involving several Baylor football players. According to the police documents, at least some Baylor officials, including coaches, knew about many of the incidents, and most players did not miss playing time for disciplinary reasons. None of the incidents has been widely reported to the media. We will also have more on that story in the blink of an eye. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to be a part of today's show, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there. I will read it right here on our airwaves, or you can even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Without further ado, folks, I do believe it's about that time to start the show.
A little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix, and if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it.
Give it up, baby. Give it up. Let's see you get it up. Go get this. Go get this. Go get this. Mr. Van Dyke, welcome to America. That was a pleasant surprise. He's 5'8", and he's jumping over someone who's 6'1". He knocks Jordan just a little bit on the head right there, but that spring is impressive, young man.
You Canadian dudes are really balling right now. You guys are really impressive. I'm gonna give you a 95.
Great.
I'm with Charles. I gave him 95 as well. I thought it was a great dunk. I'm looking forward to dunk number two because, you know, guys that size sometimes can do just one dunk, you know, to impress the ladies, which he did here. But it's round two to see what he can pull off. I'm excited for that.
I admit, I was like, he's too short. He really can't clear his guy. His hops ain't really, really like that. But his dunk was very impressive, so I give Justin Bieber a 95.
Got it. 95's across the board.
You're in a good position, baby. Give it up for
Dane Van Dyke. And whether pen and pad, I compose this rhyme to hip you and to get you equipped for the summertime. What's up, good people? Welcome to another afternoon right here on WKAR's Current Sports. Boy, oh boy, we've got a great show in store for you all. Phone lines are now open. 517-355-9527. And what you just heard was a pretty cool moment. Last night on TNT's The Dunk King. I don't know how many of you guys even know about this show. Many probably don't, though. Seeing as though, you know, when you look at the NBA playoffs that's taking place right now, TNT is broadcasting the Western Conference Finals between the Golden State Warriors and the Oklahoma City Thunder. And now, you know, Game 2 is in the books. The series is tied. The Thunder and the Warriors are now tied. I think many people predicted after the dust settled in Game 2 that we will be looking at a 1-1 series. Golden State, if they're going to go out, they're not going to go out like that, all right? So after each of those games, there's a new series entitled The Dunk King, hosted by Terrence J, in which just crazy basketball players with mad hops across the entire nation and internationally as well, they come on this show and they compete in ideally a dunk contest. And it was so cool just sitting back. I watched most of episode one after game one between the Thunder and Warriors earlier this week. And then last night I sat up and watched much of game two. And then after game two, the Dunk King version two aired, episode two aired. And, you know, it's so crazy, though. I mean, you know, you heard a moment there. I mean, this dude was 5'8". 5'8", folks. You know, I'm average height for a guy. And you know, I'm about 5'9", 5'10", right? This dude's 5'8", about 2 inches shorter than me. And just could jump out the gym last night, folks. But as I'm watching it, I'm watching these crazy, you know, crazy ballers who just have hops that only the man upstairs can give you. I'm sitting there saying to myself, how many people are really watching this right now? Because it was on at like midnight, bleeding into like 1 and 2 in the morning, like into the wee hours of the morning, nobody's watching it. So it came across my mind like, dude, why would they broadcast this after each and every Western Conference game, at Western Conference Finals game? So I was a bit puzzled. But if you haven't checked it out, folks, you can just simply go on YouTube and they have highlights from both episode 1 and 2 posted. But man, oh man, there are some guys out there that probably don't even know what a pick and roll is, but at the same time, they are freakishly athletic. So I encourage you guys to check that out if you love seeing, you know, just aerobics in the air done with the basketball that you haven't seen in your normal dunk contest during an NBA All-Star weekend, all right? So definitely check that show out. I want to start today's show, though, by talking about the news that we just talked about in our quick hit headliners concerning the Big Ten Network and a new media rights deal. As I stated in the Quick Hit Headliners, according to reports, that Jim Delaney, the commissioner of the Big Ten, will acknowledge but neither confirm nor deny the Big Ten is said to have been partnering up or will partner up, I should say, with Fox for half of its new media rights deal set to begin in 2017. Really interesting stuff. I want to read a quote, a direct quote. This is coming from Northwestern Athletic Director Jim Phillips. when it concerns the deal. And I'll even read the prelude leading up to the quote. This is coming from SportsIllustrated.com, SI.com. Quote, the league's administrators and coaches heard Delaney's update, Jim Delaney, the commissioner of the Big Ten, his update over 3 days of confabs in suburban Chicago. And if ESPN isn't a part of the picture moving forward, no one seemed to be panicking. Now, this quote comes from Northwestern AD Jim Phillips. Quote, no one has amnesia about the relationship we have had with ESPN. It's a great group. They are terrific. But we are at a different place, and they are at a different place in 2016 than we were in the last round. That doesn't mean we can't get to the altar and get married again. I like that pun. But we are at the dating stage right now, and that's a process. That always occurs when you go through renegotiation. And he goes on to say, quote, you certainly love to stay married with that current partner, but ultimately you have to do what's best, what's in the best interest for the 14 institutions. That's where Jim is tremendous. He has not only the support and the confidence of the athletic directors, but more importantly, he's got the support and confidence of the presidents. He'll move us forward just like he has, end quote. And you know what? I couldn't help but think about, you know, ESPN, the mothership is what Dan Patrick calls it, right? And how over the years, in recent years, ESPN has taken a bit of a hit financially, so much so that they've had to renegotiate its annual budget. And in that process, you're going to lose a lot of people off that ship. And a few are just going to jump off the ship and abandon it. And, you know, some of the big names that we've seen in recent months and years that have decided to take their broadcasting talents elsewhere include, recently, Mike Tirico, Colin Cowherd, who's now with Fox Sports, Ben Simmons now is with HBO, and his show, actually, I believe, debuts next month, and Ben Simmons is really going to, he's going to be like a kid in a candy store now. You know, Ben Simmons is always, he's always been known when he was with ESPN for, you know, pushing the envelope with things he had to say and his demeanor in certain conversations. And, you know, he got a lot of backlash when he criticized the NFL. The NFL has a long partnership with ESPN. But now Ben Simmons gets to say whatever he wants. He's going to be on HBO, excuse me. And I saw the preview for his new show, and at the end, he drops an F-bomb during the promo. So, yeah, Ben Simmons, he's certainly glad he left. Keith Olbermann is another name you can bring up. We reported yesterday how Chris Spielman will no longer be with ESPN doing college football, but he's now moving to Fox as well. So, and also Robert Flores, one of the most renowned ESPN Sports Center anchors in recent years. He was actually with ESPN for over, 11 years now. Robert Flores announced in February that he would be leaving the mothership. It's so crazy, though, because, you know, when you look at the hardcore numbers and just the viewership and subscribers to those who watch ESPN, they have certainly taken a hit, folks. This is coming from Fox Sports, reporting on the situation at ESPN. This is written by Clay Travis. Quote, according to a 10,000 filing from Disney, which you can read here, ESPN now has 92 million subscribers. That's a troubling number because just 2 years ago, now this article was written in November of last year, to put this in context now. Quote, that's a troubling number because just 2 years ago, ESPN reported it had 99 million subscribers in the same 10K filing. The last time ESPN had 92 million subscribers was back in 2006. So the past 2 years have erased the previous 7 years of subscriber growth. Folks, those numbers are daunting. Now, it goes on to say these filings are important because it's the first public acknowledgement of ESPN's massive subscriber loss, given that the average ESPN subscriber pays $6.61 a channel per month. That means that ESPN has lost somewhere in the neighborhood, and this is a crazy number here, a $550 million. Again, $550 million in subscriber revenue per year since 2013. And moreover, the decline in subscribers over the past 2 years is also hitting ESPN2, a loss of 7 million subscribers. ESPN News, a loss of 6 million subscribers. ESPN Classic, which I had no idea even existed anymore, a loss of 6 million subscribers, and ESPNU, a loss of 4 million subscribers. So I really think that when the Big Ten is evaluating which media outlet they want to broadcast their content to, if you look at those numbers, again, ESPN losing subscribers and viewership over, you know, since 2006, I mean, it's really startling. And I remember last year when I brought up a conversation to our airwaves where ESPN, you know, they had put out the annual ratings report, right? And during one period last year, ESPN's ratings were only the second lowest to the Weather Channel, folks. Yeah, the Weather Channel. So it's a combination of many things. I feel like we live in an industry now where, as far as how you get your sports content, it varies across the board. Many folks, all you have to do is really just crack open your laptop or log into your smartphone or your iPad or whatever tablet device you have. Simply type in ESPN.com or go to a respective website, and you can pretty much stream any sporting event you want. Simple as that. And what I find a lot of people, what they do is, and a lot of my friends do this nowadays. First off, a lot of my friends don't even have cable. They don't see the benefit in having cable out there. I mean, I have cable and I look at my bill every single month and I'm sitting there saying, wow, my goodness, that's a lot of money. But I continue to pay it. I don't know why. I watch a lot of things. I watch, other than sports, I watch a lot of, you know, television, you know, on networks like VH1 and HBO, Star, some, you know, things of that nature. But when you evaluate how people get their sports today, what a lot of my friends do is they, you know, they hook up with one of my buddies who have, you know, a subscription with ESPN, a password and username. And what they will do is they will just use that person's username and password to stream that content online. Simple as that. So they don't miss anything. And it's a great alternative than paying a cable bill each and every month and ideally going broke. So, you know, it's so crazy because I believe that the way in which we get our media content today is becoming so easy. The internet has opened up the floodgates. And right now, ESPN is finding it very hard to try and keep its numbers steady each and every ratings period. And I don't know. I don't know if we'll see ESPN, you know, combat the situation with Fox Sports and how Big Ten content is going to be broadcasted. But right now, when reading into those quotes and hearing what Jim Delaney had to say in regards to their partnership with ESPN, which has been an elongated one in recent times, it doesn't look like ESPN is going to get a big piece of this pie. Folks, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And my big question on today's show is, I really want to know, because, you know, I've talked to a lot of people about this subject concerning, you know, how they get their sports, whether it be through a cable company or whether it be online. I'm curious to know how many of our listeners out there actually pay for cable. Do you have a subscription with ESPN? I'm curious. Call in 517-355-9527, or you can leave a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, or even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. I want to invite the man behind the glass right now, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. Isaac, do you pay for cable?
I do not, but I have it. So it's this dual-sided sword where I guess I pay for rent, which comes with cable. So I don't directly pay for cable myself unless
I'm. But ideally you do, actually, though. What would you do, though, if you pay your rent? You know, and if so, I'm guessing your apartment complex provides the cable for you.
Correct.
So yeah, so you do pay for cable then, because yeah, I'm sure that money that's included in your rent goes to that cable bill that the complex has to pay for.
Well, of course. But last summer, cable was actually independent of my rent because I was in a house, and that summer I did not have cable. So it depends for me. If it wasn't included in my package, I don't think I would necessarily, simply for the fact that I can use my friend's account and my dad's account to get access to certain channels where I can watch things. And for ESPN itself, Watch ESPN has you covered all the time. And actually, my roommate this past year actually would always be on the TV. So I never had access to the TV. Mm. So I would just go up into my loft and watch ESPN or whatever I needed on my phone. So I ideally don't use my cable or my TV all that much.
And how did you, and I know with watch ESPN, though, you still have to have a subscription with a cable company, right? You still have to have a username and a password, right?
Correct, yeah.
So with that being said, is that through your cable company that you pay for?
That's through my dad's cable company.
Gotcha. So, okay, so you use, that's what I'm saying. That's what a lot of people do now. You know, they get a password. You know, a lot of my friends who want to catch Game of Thrones, for instance, they use my HBO Go password. You know what I mean? And I don't know if there's a way to combat that, to be honest with you, unless you register each and every device to solely for that program to be solely viewed on that respective device. You're going to keep on losing money here. So,
well, and what Netflix has, which ESPN could try to mirror, is maybe limiting the amount of users who can be on at one time, or the amount of users and devices that you can connect your account to. But even that is tricky, because then that could even be solved by simple, hey, all of these are my devices. I just gave one to my brother for the weekend, so that's him. You can log him out if you need, but I do need that that device. So it's a tough thing to combat, you're right, but they could at least try to mirror the Netflix strategy. That might work better.
Yeah, and the only way I can see ESPN combating these numbers is, again, to kind of do what they've done when it comes to the NBA, all right, and also the partnership that they have with the NFL. You got to buy up the rights. Simple as that. You know, if you want to combat these numbers and to make sure that your revenue does not continually go down the drain, you have to approach respective networks, such as the Big Ten Network, and say, you know what? We want to have sole ownership of this, or a big piece of it, so to speak. And if you do that, I think you at least save yourself some face and save yourself some time down the road. The partnership with ESPN and that contract is so big, Isaac, that ESPN still is going to roll in a lot of dollars. But across the board, when it comes to college sports, you're starting to see a lot of these college sports saying, you know what, maybe we could go the other route and go with Fox or someone else. I don't know.
And what I wonder, the question I have is this a good thing that ESPN is losing money? Because in my opinion, I think that it is. I think you get more diversity of both opinions and content because of this. For example, for the Barclays Premier League, and you know I had to bring up soccer, but the Barclays Premier League over in England, it's really grown in popularity here in the U.S. And NBC Sports, in addition to Fox Sports, in the past have owned those rights. ESPN hasn't since probably 2005. Mm-hmm. And with that, both of those companies were able to establish themselves as mainstays in the sports network department. And with that, they were able to buy up college sports events. The Fox Sports was able to buy up MLB. NBC Sports was able to buy up NHL. So all of those are big. And then the other thing is, let's say ESPN shoots a promo with Steph Curry. There might be a little bit of a mute when it comes to criticism of Steph Curry then from ESPN talking heads. That's not the case when you have multiple networks going at it. You get the competition. So everybody's going to say something that the other sides are too afraid to say.
Yeah, that's so true. And you know, I'm a big numbers guy. So, you know, there are a lot of people out there to say, okay, well, if ESPN wants to combat those numbers, then you need to do a better job with your programming, your original programming. But I want to put something in perspective here. Let's take PTI, for example. Pardon the interruption with Wilbon and Tony Kornheiser as one of the most successful original programming spots in sports broadcasting, and has been for a while. PTI receives around 900,000 viewers a day, according to the most recent census. That's a tremendously successful program for sports, but it's really a drop in the bucket when you compare that amount to HBO's top program, Game of Thrones. Look at the numbers when it comes to Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones receives 20 million viewers an episode. That's you're not competing with that, okay? Let's just be real here, all right? So at the end of the day, it's about streaming as much live sporting events as you can. If you're going to combat this, you have to just constantly, you know, dip your toe in soccer. You know what I mean? If you have to. Bring in, you know, some more eyeballs that way. You know, maybe more hockey events. I don't know. There are other sports out there that ESPN has not tapped into that may help. But hey, if I really knew that was going to change around the situation, I probably wouldn't be sitting in this seat right now. So I'm curious to know what you guys think out there. 517-355-9527. Call in. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will give you all a preview of tonight's Current Sports TV sit-down with a legend here in Mid-Michigan and beyond, the first African-American head coach at Michigan State University, Mr. Jim Bibbs. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Folks, tonight is the night where you get to check out Current Sports TV at 10:30 p.m. on WKAR-TV. And, folks, you don't want to miss it. And we love to give you guys a preview of the night's chat with whoever the guest may be. And tonight we have a treat in store for all of you out there. And, again, we reward those who tune into Current Sports each and every Thursday. And my guest is Jim Bibbs. Jim Bibbs is the longest tenured track and field coach in program history. He was the first African-American head coach at Michigan State. And during his career, his student athletes won 52 Big Ten titles, earned All-American honors 26 times, claimed 3 NCAA titles, and set 2 world records. It was really remarkable getting a chance to pick his brain. And, you know, I really could have done an hour special with Jim because he has so many memories throughout his tenure that dates back, here to the Michigan State program since 1968. And he was telling me stories about how, you know, he once sat down with Jesse Owens, the great Jesse Owens, for 2 hours. And, you know, he told me stories about, you know, growing up and living in the 60s and throughout that time period and marching behind Martin Luther King Jr. in Detroit. I mean, just countless stories. I really could have sat down with him for an hour. But I did get a chance to sit down with him for about 15 minutes for a great spot that, again, will air on Current Sports TV tonight. So I want to give you guys a preview of that conversation. And I first started by asking Coach Bibbs how he ended up here at Michigan State University.
Well, what took place, I really was hired in late 68. What took place is probably the riot started in Detroit in 1967. Mm-hmm. And I tell people, and they knew blacks still had matches, so really decided to hire a black coach. But I did know that there was some black athletes before then that talked to Biggie Munn and so forth and so on about hiring black coaches and black trainers and so forth. And I happened to have a wonderful career going right through and then, because in 1967, my high school team won the state championship, and I was Pan American women's coach for 1967 United States Pan American Games. And so everything just was going beautiful for me in 1967. So I guess I was kind of the hottest coach going. and they're looking for a coach, so I guess that's what led the Biggie Munn calling me and asked me to come up here and talk to him about coming up Michigan State.
And that certainly was a racially charged period, more so in the South than up here in the North, but still nonetheless. And, you know, with you being, you know, the first African-American coach, head coach here at Michigan State, I got to know, Jim, what sort of pressure did you feel during that time period?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I felt pressure from that, because the riots were in 67. It was highly charged. But as far as track and field, I've always loved track and field, and I love coaching young people. So I realized I was the first. I realized certainly I was African-American. But at the same time, once I got here, it's sort of like I got to do the best job I can do. And then having young athletes like Herb Washington coming here the same time, I really consider myself blessed to have an athlete of that quality, and the Rube Butcher and other athletes. And so most of my interest was in coaching and doing the best job I can. So, and the only thing that when you do jobs, when you're the first and only one, other black athletes in football and women's basketball and all that stuff, they kind of attracted to you also. Mm-hmm. So they sort of come to you just for counseling and making them feel more comfortable. They have someone they relate to. But as far as individual pressure, I've never been one to feel a lot of pressure about race because, you know, I'm a coach who happened to be black. And so I got to do a good job. I want to do the best job I could anyway.
Now, Jim, you mentioned how there were a few African-American athletes who put a little pressure on the Michigan State staff here to hire more black coaches.
Right.
Did you ever find out who those athletes were?
Yeah, but right now I can't recall who all of them were. But, yes, Don Crawford probably one of them. But I can't remember, and I can't do justice to them. But I do know that some existing athletes up here did put a little pressure on them. And at that time, I did gradually find out more and more who they were. But right now, I can't recall them because that's a long time ago.
Right. Definitely. Now, you coached some great ones. You know, you and I were chatting before we took the air, and you mentioned Herb Washington and Marshall Dill, you know, Karen Dennis, Jody Brown Clark. I mean, some of the greats some of the greats to ever do it. Who had to be your favorite athlete coming through that time period?
Well, you know, I'm not about to tell you who's my favorite athlete.
It's hard to pick one, right?
On TV?
Yeah.
No, I'm too smart for that.
Right.
but all those you mentioned and a few more you did not mention were among my favorites. Mm-hmm. Along with the ones you just mentioned, then you got Elliott Tabor, a great quarter mile who came from Detroit, who ended up running 45 flat automatic for me. The Cedric sisters, Pam Cedric and Jackie Cedric, became two great half miles who ran 205 and 203. So I just had so many fine athletes. I didn't even go back to high school with Danny Hagan, Art Small, and some kids, Elise Lanson. So basically, I've had so many favorites, I don't know if I could pick out one favorite one, you know.
And certainly.
Shel Gilliam and so many. But I just been blessed with a lot of fine athletes. And most of all, they're fine people. And all of them have went on, like Herb was about 30 McDonald's now, and Shel doing well, and Judy's back here. As I said, Judy's the only athlete I've ever had that has a silver medal in the Olympics and a doctorate degree.
Right, exactly.
And so you can't ask for much more than that.
No, you can't.
And so I just have many athletes that have went on and are doing very, very well now.
And doing some reading before, you know, we sat down for this interview, Jim, Judy had a quote, an interesting quote, when it was announced that you will be inducted into the Hall of Fame, the clip we just showed. She mentioned how when you used to coach, that it wasn't just about track and field. It was also about instilling a knowledge to these young men and women about how to succeed in life as well. Why was that such an important component to what you taught away from the track and field as well?
Well, you know, as I said, I'm interested even today in youngsters being successful after this sport. We all know that we have a little time in limelight, but the biggest adjustment is when that time is over. You got to realize you got all these friends, you got all this adolescence, you're in the spotlight, and everybody, treat you like you're like Jesus for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But then when that's over, you got to learn to come on back and be a normal person. And I want them to grow up to be, my main job is making men out of young boys and making ladies out of young girls. And so it all got to fit in. If you're just a great athlete, now what's going to happen when that's over? Mm-hmm. I don't care if you LeBron. At some point in time, basketball gonna be over.
Right.
And that's why I'm so happy with Magic Johnson, that life goes on and he's just as successful in his business life as he was in basketball. And I'm just proud of things like that, and I tell my own kids that, and I tell every kid that I treat as my own. I want you to be successful when this is over. Plus, I want them to navigate going to the university. If you got to know the rules, go by the rules, and fit into the system and become successful. So you graduate at the end. You know, if you run and then you don't know how to navigate yourself through the system and then you don't get a degree, you basically have wasted time. Because no matter how great you are, unless you are Jesse Owens or Carl Lewis, you know, they forget you. Other athletes come along behind you, they're just going to break your records, make them forget you.
Right.
You know? And so that's why it's important to me. I want these young men and young ladies to grow up and be gentlemen while they're growing up and turn out to be good husbands, fathers, and so forth, like my own son. My granddaughter is graduating next month, and she's going to the University of Michigan, by the way. And so even though I'm a Spartan, I'm proud of her going to the University of Michigan.
Certainly.
She got accepted to honors college at the University of Michigan. So I want this life after I'm proud of my son to have had a successful marriage and have two fine kids that's doing very, very well. And
Jim, you know, when you evaluate the challenge that coaches have today, because, you know, I've had conversations with countless coaches, many MSU coaches, about the challenge of making sure that their respective student athletes are honed in on priorities. There's so many distractions today, and maybe right. The number one being social media. How do you equate today's coaching to the coaching that you had to go through back in the day? Do you think it's more challenging in 2016?
Oh, I think it's more challenging because just what you said, social media. Mm-hmm. You got everybody think they're a coach. Now, everybody thought they're a coach back in my day, but they didn't have social media that they could tweet it every day and tell you, you're not doing this, or your athletes are doing this. So, no, I think it's more challenging. These kids got social media to worry about. And on a track rule, you know, you got even now when you coach one of the national team, when I coached the national team, all I had to do was go there and coach the athletes. Now when you get one of these assignments to coach the team, you gotta deal with their agents and all these kind of things. And the agents is trying to sell his kids so he don't want his kids to practice the relays because they gotta practice. Their individual event, because that's where their money is coming from. You got all those things.
Political.
And it's political.
Right.
And so I did not have to deal with that much politics, you know. And not to say parents. Every parent comes along nowadays, wants his kid to grow up and be Carl Lewis, and he figures if you don't expose him enough, he won't be Carl Lewis. And he don't realize that God made Carl Lewis. We didn't make him.
Yeah, that's so true. But, that is very, very true. And it is so challenging.
So it is. I think it's more challenging today. But social media is definitely one of the biggest things. You know, you look around, these kids walk around. It's hard to see a kid walk around. They ain't looking at a cell phone.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And so it's hard for them to focus on what you were talking about. And I think kids are so much more even more individualistic. They all want to succeed. But those kids I just mentioned, Herb and Marshall, they're pretty much dedicated to being the best they could be. And my job is helping be the best they can. But even the sport itself, you know, they got kids, and I hate to say it, but you got kids like football. Mm-hmm. They wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, going to the weight room.
Right.
Then they practicing, they got all this newspapers, all this stuff.
A lot of distractions.
And then people upset because they don't turn out to be good students. They don't have time to be good students unless they're awfully bright.
Right.
And so they're so regimented, and the sport is so important.
Right.
Now, and I don't think nothing too much more important than my sport. But at the same time, I like for them to be a student athlete.
Exactly.
Not an athlete, student.
Jim, before we get to the 12th man, we got 30 seconds. What do you believe is the legacy you left behind here at Michigan State?
That's a good question. I just hope that I did my best to try to make every young man and every young lady and the fine athletes and even better people.
I like that. Very well put, Jim. You got 5 more minutes?
5 more minutes?
5 more minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Stick around.
I hope so. I'm 87 years old now, you know. I don't know if I got 5 more minutes or not.
You got 5 minutes. Jim Bibbs, let's go to the 12th man. Here we go.
All right, folks. That probably was my favorite moment of the interview. He's like, yeah, well, I'm 87 years old. I don't know if I got 5 more minutes, but I'll stick around. So if you want to catch the 12th man, and again, it's going to be a jam-packed episode tonight, again, with my guest Jim Bibbs, the first African-American head coach here at Michigan State. Catch it tonight on your television at 10:30 p.m. on WKAR-TV. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will wrap up the show with Throwback Thursday. And also, how do you speed up the game of baseball? We'll try to answer that question. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It is Thursday, and each and every Thursday here on our airways, we love to take a look at what exactly happened on this particular Thursday in sports history. We dub it Throwback Thursday. So today is Thursday, May 19th. Let's hop into that Current Sports time machine.
But the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long.
Eisenman back over his step. Into the spot for Brown. Shoots. Yes. And there it goes. You never know when to expect it. Darren McCarty said before.
All right, it is time for Throwback Thursday. So what exactly happened on this day in sports history? Well, it is May 19th, and we have not just one, but 2 moments concerning, well, no, actually, no, I'm sorry, I read that wrong. So just 1 moment concerning Ty Cobb and 1 concerning the great Cy Young. On this day back in 1910, Cy Young of the Cleveland Indians, he got his 500th hit, pretty cool moment there. And get this, in 1912, American League president Ben Johnson told the Detroit Tigers that if they continued to protest Ty Cobb's suspension, they would be banned from baseball. So when I read this moment, it intrigued me to say, okay, what exactly happened to lead the AL president, Mr. Johnson, to tell the Tigers that if you continue to protest this whole Ty Cobb situation, we're banning you guys? I had to look it up. So, you know, I found an article from the New York Times. This is written by Jim Riesler, who wrote an article entitled, quote, "A Beating in the Stands Followed by One on the Field." And, you know, again, in May of 1912, on this day, I should say this is when I guess AL President Ben Johnson said, hey, you got to stop protesting or we are going to ban you guys. But sometime in this month, back in 1912, during Ty Cobb's first visit of the season to New York's Hilltop Park with the Detroit Tigers, he enticed one of baseball's most notorious and bizarre episodes. He was suspended and reinstated. His teammates went on the sport's first strike, and a team of sandlotters and amateurs headed by a seminary student became a part of baseball lore. Cobb blamed everyone but himself, mainly the fans and American League president Ben Johnson. Now, it's said that Cobb and the Tigers arrived in New York in a sour mood with a, you know, 10-13 record. And
ready to beat the lowly Highlanders, who were renamed the Yankees the next year, to put that in historical context. Now, Detroit won two of the first three games with Cobb, the center fielder, going 5-for-12 despite a steady raising from fans. As soon as Cobb hit the field for the series finale on May 15th, he became a target, especially for one vocal male spectator sitting close to the Tigers' dugout on third base. Now, in his memoirs, Cobb described the man as, quote, a character who had ridden me hard in past New York appearances, end quote. The heckling was very crude. It was very ugly, nasty. And they traded barbs that were audible to many in the park in Washington Heights. Now, the abuse grew so intense that Cobb did not return to the bench after the second inning, staying in the ballpark's carriage park beyond center field. But as he ducked into the dugout before batting in the fourth, Cobb hurled an insult at the man. And that's according to Cobb's biographer, Charles Alexander. The man, a Tammany Hall page named Claude Luker, or Luker in some accounts, who had lost all but two of his fingers while operating in a printing press, he continued taunting Cobb. Now, the Tigers' Sam Crawford asked Cobb what he intended to do. And with that, Cobb suddenly vaulted into the stands toward Luker, seated about 12 rows up in the grandstand, knocking Luker down. Cobb began kicking and stomping him. Wow. And then, you know, a few accounts say that, you know, someone yelled, quote, Cobb, that man has no hands. And then Cobb replied with, quote, I don't care if he has no feet. Yeah. And, of course, Cobb was ejected from the game, which the Tigers eventually won 8-4. So a lot occurred in that moment back in 1912. And many people still talk about that moment today. How crazy is that story, though, Isaac? I had no idea. Because, again, in our Throwback Thursday, it just kind of gave just a generic, you know, American League president, Ben Johnson, told the Tigers that if they continued to protest Ty Cobb's suspension, they would be banned from baseball. And I'm sitting there saying, okay, what occurred? And doing a little bit of digging, I found out exactly what happened. But, man, that's ugly, right?
Yeah. Really is.
And a bit ironic. Gosh.
Back because, in the day, yeah.
Yeah, a bit ironic because we were talking about that huge brawl that just took place, one of the craziest brawls in MLB in recent history, I should say, between, you know, Bautista and Rogue Nate Odor. And now, you know, you have a moment here in history that is certainly vivid in the memories of many that can recount what took place back then. So, crazy stuff. So that took place in 1912, folks. In 1918, the Washington Senators played their first Sunday game. They beat Cleveland 1-0 in 18 innings. That's a long game. In 1935, the National Football League adopted an annual college draft to begin in 1936. In 1942, Paul Wehner of the Boston Braves became the third National League player to get 3,000 hits. In 1962, Stan Musial, he set the National League hit record when he got his 3,431st hit. Impressive there. In 1974, the Philadelphia Flyers became the first post-1967 expansion team to win the Stanley Cup. The Flyers won the Cup the following season as well. In 1984, the Edmonton Oilers won the first Stanley Cup. They defeated the New York Islanders in five games. In 1988, the Boston Red Sox retired Bobby Doerr's number one. In 1991, Willie T. Ribbs, love that name, became the first black driver to make the Indianapolis 500. In 1994, Jennifer Capriati checked into a drug rehab center, really going through a tough time there in the 90s for Capriati. And in 2002, Roger Clemens of the New York Yankees got his 287th win. He tied for 22nd place on the all-time victory list. So a pretty eventful Throwback Thursday there. Again, that wraps up your Throwback Thursday moments for this day in sports history, May 19th. All right, 5 minutes left in the show, and tomorrow I will be stepping away from the driver's seat because I will be attending a wedding of one of my best friends, Tim. He's getting married, so I will be in Detroit throughout the weekend. And Isaac, you will be hosting your very first show here on our airwaves. You're going to be pretty excited about that, I know.
Oh, I'm thrilled. I can't wait to talk to the people who I know so well. Please don't tune out just because Al's not here. I know he's the star of the set, but even so.
No, but yeah, and Drew Hill is going to be engineering for you. So Isaac will be manning the fort tomorrow. Who do you got coming in tomorrow, Isaac?
So we've got James Edwards from the Lansing State Journal coming in. He's going to talk some basketball, Lansing United, and he's actually attending a pretty cool event. And then we haven't touched on the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs quite as much. I thought, hey, it's Reflection Friday, Flashback Friday. Why not bring it back to Jason Ruff for a two-match for roughing segment?
I like that. Yeah, much to talk about when concerning the NHL playoffs as well. So I like that. All right, the great lineup for tomorrow. So tune in as Isaac takes over for me tomorrow. And also, I want to pose this question out there as well. We'll certainly continue this discussion on next week's Current Sports. But, you know, there's been this whole conversation that's really been brewing for quite some time now concerning the game of baseball and how exactly do you speed it up. Now, MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred, he isn't happy that baseball games are just taking so long to complete. The average time for a 9-inning game is almost 7 minutes longer at this point last season. Yeah, folks. Games in 2016 right now are averaging 3 hours and 26 seconds. That is entirely too long. And to put that in perspective, since 1950, the average length of a regular season game has, again, swelled to 3 hours and roughly 8 minutes on average from just 2 hours and 23 minutes back in the day in 1950, folks. Now, baseball says it is more concerned about the pace of the game rather than its actual length. And, you know, when you look at the ratings for the game overall, since peaking in 1978 and 1980 at a 32.8 rating, and during those years you had the Yankees and Dodgers and the Phillies and Royals, the World Series audience has really shrunk as well. If you look at the average rating of a World Series matchup today, folks, we're only looking at like an 8.2 rating on average. So you go from 32.8 back in the early 80s to now just an 8.2 rating. And Isaac, I really do believe that the pace of a baseball game and how long it takes, because I'm going to be honest with you, man, I can't, unless it's like the playoffs and the Detroit Tigers are playing, I cannot sit on my couch and just stay glued to my television for 3+ hours watching baseball. I just can't do it, dude.
I need something going on in the background, because the thing is, so much of baseball, even when it's going, it's waiting for a pitch to be thrown, waiting for the umps to review something. So in many ways, they're going backwards with this. I can't necessarily tell you how to speed it up, but at the same time, no, it's a problem that needs to be fixed, no doubt.
I have a few ideas. I want to propose that on next week's Current Sports. And on Monday, I want to throw it out there to you guys that, and we wanted to have her on today, but her schedule didn't line up. She's actually going to Flint to help out the whole situation with the Flint water crisis. But Taylor Rooks of the Big Ten Network will be with us on Monday's Current Sports. You do not want to miss that. But I do have a few ideas on how you can possibly speed up the game of baseball and try to attract more eyeballs. Again, take my opinion with a grain of salt, but we'll discuss that in length on Monday's show. But thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to today's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic day. And on behalf of me, have a fantastic weekend. And be easy, people.